listening to This Just In, recorded on Sunday, July 23rd, 2006, and distributed on Monday, July 24th, 2006. We are located at www.the-means.com. For our loyal listeners, you'll probably notice that we're in a completely different format this time. I'm doing an intro at the head of the show rather than at the end, and that's because we did a special extended edition this time around, about an hour-long show which you're about to embark upon. And after recording it, and then sitting through about an hour and a half of editing, and never having saved it, my computer then shut down, and I lost all the edits I did. So instead of being diligent and re-editing the whole goddamn thing over again, you're just going to get a special edition of This Just In, a special uncut, uncensored Girls Gone Wild edition with no edits, no music breaks, nothing. And what you're going to hear is exactly as it was recorded, except for, of course, the music intro. So enjoy. This will probably be one of the only times you'll get an uncut, uncensored edition, because I'm never going to make the same damn mistake again. So here you go. This Just In for July 24th, 2006. God knows what episode number it is. Enjoy.
This is the real weepy and light tragic part of the story beginning, oh my brothers and only friends.
Bob Mapleford, potential getaway driver, go.
No!
But I was told that I could listen to the radio at a reasonable volume.
No!
Excuse me, we are in a little bit of a hurry.
Hang on, Voltaire.
It's yet another long series of diversions in an attempt to avoid responsibility.
Hey everyone, it's This Just In, the podcast that has been gone for nearly a month now. We have returned, we're not dead. Most of you are probably surprised by this popping up on your iTunes and suddenly appearing on your iPod. We are back. The reason for the strange disappearance was I moved. And right after moving, we had a visitor for a couple weeks, so having a podcast, getting that done was a bit difficult, but we are back, and hopefully we'll be back at a regular basis.
That visitor, it had to have been a famous person.
Yes, they'll remain anonymous because they're so famous.
Yes.
It was Daniel Day-Lewis. I know there was going to be rumors, but yes, I am in a gay relationship with Daniel Day-Lewis.
Any girlfriend would understand that.
Yes, you have to. Or else he will murder you. Like he did Magua. Or did he kill Magua, or did the other guy kill Magua?
Magua was killed by the dad.
Yeah.
Yeah, the dad, because the son got killed, and then his body was thrown over the cliff, and then the dad
came. Yeah, the dad was so pissed.
Yeah, so pissed, he battered Magua's face, his legs, everything was destroyed on Magua.
His old man strength, which we all know resides in the inner workings of every old man, to have superior strength based on their pissedness.
Yep.
And for those of you who have no idea what we're talking about Last of the Mohicans. Which I'm sure there's a ton of people.
Finish the intro.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so it's This Just In. We were gone. We're back. We're working on the journal, which I'm thinking will probably come out late August. Hopefully. I don't know.
It'll come out late August. We'll be done in the next couple weeks, I'm hoping.
Yeah, but it takes forever for the printer stuff. But that's being worked on. There's a lot of good shit in it, including a story that we just accepted about Scott Baio. So that's something to look forward to.
Incredible story about Scott Baio.
Yeah, but today's podcast might be a little bit longer to make it up to you, I guess.
Is that really a reward?
I don't know. Probably not. I know it's not a reward to me, because I've got to edit it.
So, well.
But we also have a ton of topics. I know a ton of shit's been going on that I want to talk about. Yeah. Namely, our first thing.
Oh, wait, who are we? In case people have forgotten.
The editors of The Means.
Your Tanner Higgins
podcasting from areas outside of Los Angeles that experienced a 3.6 magnitude earthquake today.
What? Hold on. Yeah. I'm Chris podcasting from Detroit. And what's this earthquake? How did it feel?
It woke me up today. It was my alarm clock.
Was that your first earthquake?
Well, we've had tremors. This was the first, like, really noticeable quake.
Really?
I mean, it was, like, we have glass closet doors, and they were shaking and rattling, you know? And it was enough to wake me up from sleep, so it was...
Were you scared?
You get that feeling in your chest, like, you know, it's weird. Like, an earthquake's like nothing else. You know, coming from Michigan, we had tornadoes and stuff, and there was some fear involved, but you always felt safe. But the power of an earthquake and the noise it makes sort of a rumbling noise. It's like really, there's something really frightening about it. Even if it's really weak, you think like, oh my God, is this going to get worse, you know?
Yeah, that would be my number one fear is like, every earthquake has to probably start off with just that slight brrr, and then it just goes up from there.
Yeah.
And, like, there's got to be that feeling at all times. Like, first off, living out there and you know, being battered over the head with it, but you'd probably be thinking, is this the big one that they've always talked about?
And you know it's coming. I mean, everyone knows a big earthquake's going to hit this area at some point.
Yeah, so it's got to be nerve-wracking. I don't know, I'd be... And it would suck, too. Like, imagine if you're just starting to get a good night's sleep, and then 3 in the morning, you know, or there needs to be an earthquake curfew, just so it doesn't bother people and wake them up.
But it is, I mean, there's something so powerful about the earthquake. It's like the same power you get when you're in the ocean, and all of a sudden that undertow just gets wicked.
Almost
and you're
died
like,
in
oh
the ocean.
My God.
I almost died in the ocean. I hate it.
I think that's the closest thing you can relate, like, the power of an earthquake to, just this otherworldly, all-encompassing force that cannot be stopped, you know?
For all the times I've ever been out in California, I've never once felt the ground shake while I was out there. So I have this false... You know, like, in my mind, they just don't happen out there, because I've never felt it, but I don't know if I want to.
I'm amazed at how frequent it's been. I mean... It seems, I would say, every 2 to 3 months I feel something, but this is definitely the worst it's been in a year. And it was it was only 3.6, which they call very minor, you know.
Yeah.
But it was enough to shake the closet.
Well, a few years back, I remember I was at work, and we had a small tremor here in Michigan. But, you know, it was very minor. I don't think it registers at all on any Richter scales, but... It was just the residual effect of something that happened out near Montreal, I think. There's a small earthquake out that way, but that's about it.
All right.
So, anyway, first topic.
Yeah, the first topic, I mean, I think I brought up 3 weeks ago. Well, we never talked about it, and the movie's been out for so long, probably everyone's seen it, but I still want to talk about it, because it sort of polarized fans, and that's Superman Returns, which I'm imagining most listeners have seen by now.
I think so.
I almost didn't see it because some comic book fan friends of mine hated it. And I was just assuming, like, oh, it must be a terrible movie. Then I went and saw it and actually liked it enough to put it probably in my top 5 comic book movies of all time. You know, I thought it was that good. Of course, it wasn't as good as the first Superman. But, I mean, it's Christopher Reeve, and he's, like, the ultimate badass. But, I mean, I really liked it, so I sort of maybe just wanted to go over... I know you saw it, too, and you liked it. I wanted to go over what we liked and what we didn't like, I guess, about the movie.
Yeah.
Because we both didn't love it. We liked it, you know?
Yeah, I wouldn't even put it in, like, a top 5, I don't think. I'd really have to look at what films have been out before I make that bold of a leap, but... I will say I liked the film. I wouldn't see it again, probably. I don't even think I'll buy the DVD.
Oh, yeah, I wouldn't either, but...
But...
The point is, comic book movies, good ones, have been few and far between, and it was good enough to make it in the top 5. And that isn't really saying much.
Truthfully. Okay, well, what was the first thing you liked about it? What's your number one thing that you loved about the film?
I loved Kevin Spacey in it. You know,
okay.
I mean, sure, I loved the first Superman, and Gene Hackman is one of the, you know, best actors of all time. But his Lex Luthor was always a little bit too much of a comedian, you know? And I think Kevin Spacey's Lex Luthor was much more refined, like you see him in the comics, and he seemed much more dangerous. I mean, Gene Hackman's Lex Luthor was just dangerous in that he was just sort of goofy and insane, but Kevin Spacey said that good mix of, like, genius, out-of-control genius, and just, like, ruthlessness, I think, and he pulled it off perfect. I really have no complaints with his performance. So that would be my first thing.
Okay. For me, let me... I haven't really thought through what my... part of the film was, I would have to say, I don't know, I'd have to say, you know, I really did appreciate the visual aspect of the film. It had really, you know, solid colors. I think that drew me in more than anything was just the cinematography of the film. Not to say it's like anything, it's not like the best cinematography I've ever seen, but, you know, for a comic book, it made me feel like I was looking at a comic book. You know, had that full bright color that Superman has.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that was one of the number one things, but I think I brought this up to you, too. For me, probably the number one thing that drew me to the film, again this time, is actually an element of the old film, which was the score by John Williams, I think is who does the score for it. And it was so... It pumped me up so much, listening to that theme
song. Yeah, it's a great theme.
So, and that was in my... It's got to be in my top 3, 4, 5, you know, theme songs of all time. And it was such a great... I mean, that, you know, that's not something that they did this time around. They didn't revamp it or anything. It was just the same thing, but it was driving.
Yeah, so which was, I mean, thing. That sort of brings me to a difficult part that I have, a difficult, you know, sort of element that they added to this film that I'm still not quite sure I was sold on, and that is that they did a great job of continuing the storyline of the first films. You know, having Superman return and sort of forming a continuity with the first film. That was great. But then that continuity was sort of... It was sort of ruined by the fact that they added so many things that were blatant rip-offs of the first film for nostalgic purposes. You know, almost entire scenes like Superman's scene with Lois on her rooftop.
Yep.
That was almost recreated in this movie, and it was cool for nostalgia purposes, but in terms of continuity, it didn't work. Why would they be recreating the same thing, you know?
I think that was one of the poorer parts of the film, was that they... I know Superman can become a love story. It is easily a love story as much as it is a superhero story, but you know, the Lois and Superman love story, I felt like it was done in the last few movies, and I'm not saying that they had to omit that element, but, you know, Superman flying high over the world with Lois again, I saw it before.
Yeah, exactly.
So
we needed something new, and they didn't give us that.
Exactly. Although they did give us something new between him and Lois.
Yeah, the twist.
In that there's the twist, but even that, I have issues with the twist. I hate it because I feel like I'm going to spoil it, because one of my hates of the film has to deal with the twist, so I don't know how to embed it without...
I think they handled it well. They could have went really over the top with it, but they didn't.
Sure. Well, here's my issue. Here's like my... It deals with acting, and Lois's son, he was not a good child actor. He didn't do anything for me, because they made him play... You know what he reminded me of? He reminded me of Boba Fett in the... You know,
yeah,
the kid who played
yeah.
Boba Fett in the Star Wars prequels.
Mm-hmm.
That kid who's just, like, distant, doesn't...
Yeah.
You know, you don't know where he stands on anything. Well, why isn't he just a regular kid? Is Lois and that other guy such bad parents right now that, you know, he doesn't get any interaction with other kids? Why is he distant? We're never explained that. Mm. That's never explained to us, except for through, you know... And even that doesn't explain it. I'm not going to give away anything, but even that doesn't explain why the kid's such a distant child.
Okay, I've got two quick pros, and then my biggest con for the film.
Okay.
Another pro is Jimmy Olsen, who was awesome.
See, I didn't like him.
You didn't like him?
No, I didn't like Jimmy Olsen.
Why not?
Because Jimmy Olsen delivered all these dumb lines. His scenes weren't even that good.
That's how he is in the comics, though. He's like this dumb, like, cheesy sort of guy.
But he wasn't... you're right. He was like he was in the comics, but didn't we see that in the first one? The guy who played Jimmy Olsen in the first one wasn't bad. Maybe a little old, but he wasn't bad.
I thought this guy just pulled it off better.
Okay,
you know,
right.
To me, it seemed more believable and not as cheesy.
I just didn't like his lines, I guess. He just... I remember one whole scene ended with his line, and I remember thinking, that fell flat. That wasn't funny. It wasn't anything. It was just a dumb way to end the scene.
Yeah, I think that probably is just a case of you not liking the comic book humor, you know?
Yeah.
Because he was as close to the comics as any character in that film, and sometimes, you know, direct comic translations don't work, you know.
Yeah.
Which is one thing Batman Begins got right, is that they changed things.
Scarecrow,
to work for film. Okay, now, my other pro was my favorite scene in the movie, which was the one scene where you're like, oh man, like, Superman is such a badass. And that's when you have the gunman on the roof, and Superman comes down and charges, you know, and the guy's shooting the minigun, and it's just bouncing off of him, and then he points the gun at his eye and shoots the bullet, and it just, like, crushes on his eye.
Yeah.
That was such an awesome way to show, like, just Superman's, you know, invulnerability.
But what I wanted from Superman after that happened was, I wanted him to, like, punch that dude in his face.
Yeah, but
hard.
But Superman is not Batman.
I know.
I wanted him to do that, too.
Well, that brings up another thing, too, before you get to your con. Here's another one of my pros, and I don't know how many people are going to agree or what, but I really like Brandon Routh as Superman. His Clark wasn't the best. He's not... I thought his Superman was pretty damn good.
Yeah, better than... I think better than anyone expected, at least.
Yeah. And you know, I can see him. He could carry this franchise for another movie or two. I mean, he's not as... I heard a lot of bad things about him when I was going to the theater. I checked out some reviews, and a lot of people were saying some negative things about his performance, but, you know, first off, he's up against Christopher Reeve, which we all know. He did a bang-up job. He had the best Clark I've seen, obviously. And you know, so I figured, you know, he might fail on the Clark side, but maybe he'll be good Superman, and that's how I felt. I think, you know, you can't beat Christopher Reeve, but he definitely came close. He did a good job, I think.
I mean, Christopher Reeve was so perfect, you know, it defined his career. This Superman isn't going to define Brandon Routh's career, but I think he'll do a decent enough job at it, I think.
Yeah.
Sort of like Hugh Jackman with Wolverine, where he's not perfect, but he's good enough, you know.
What was the negative you have?
The negative was, I was expecting the whole time for a big action moment where it's really intense and Superman just comes through and you're just like, you know, the music swells and it's like that big, pivotal Superman triumphing moment. And that never happened.
Yep.
And it was like, at the end of the movie, you were just kind of like, what? I don't know if it was the problem with the scheme, like Luthor's scheme. I know one of my friends thought Luthor's scheme was really lame. I thought the scheme was kind of good, but I thought the last scene wasn't enough to where Superman comes back and, like, you get goosebumps. It never happens.
See, okay, two things. I kind of agree. Luthor's scheme is dumb, and here's why. His whole goal is that he's trying to use this kryptonite to create a new landmass, and then force people onto that landmass, you know, so he can make money. Well, the problem is it doesn't create plush and green and where you would want to live. Yeah. It creates these jagged rocks where you can't build anything on. I don't understand what the allure would have been. I would have, you know, if billions of people died and I survived, I would probably avoid that land at all costs. I would just go to one of the places that still exists.
I think what Bryan Singer was trying to do, and probably failed at doing, was represent Luthor's sort of mad genius, where he doesn't get it all right, you know. But it does for the sake of the film, it doesn't quite work because it doesn't make sense in our heads.
Yeah, exactly. And then, I mean, as a money making scheme, he's going to kill billions of people and then jack up the price. But money's not going to matter if he messes up the world. So, what else? I had something else I was going to bring up too. And then the one part that was, I think, pivotal in the script that they had it all right, and then it started to go downhill, was when Superman was getting his ass kicked by Luthor and his cronies after Luthor stabbed him with that piece of kryptonite. Opportunity from that point forward to build and make Superman, like, so now Superman looks like he's gonna die. Mm-hmm. Okay, he might get saved, but now it's his time to be pissed and get back at them and like really do some damage. But then Luthor's cronies get killed by the crumbling, you know, continent that Luthor built. And then Luthor escapes, and Superman doesn't really have a moment where you're watching him and you go, oh God, here it comes.
Yeah.
Now Superman is gonna really mess someone's shit up. And it just never happened. Instead,
and
you know,
I think
Luther,
everyone was expecting it, too.
Yeah. And, you know, I can only... Every Superman film seems to end with, you know, Superman hovering over the Earth and all's well now on planet Earth. But, you know, he should have made things all well with... Instead of him, you know, because he lifts that mass out of the Earth, and that's cool, that landmass, and it is kind of cool. But once he threw that away, then it was time for him to actually exact some sort of retribution, you know, and do something sweet. Not enough that he throws a big hunk of Earth away.
So. Okay. Well, continuing with our movie topics, because we have three movie topics, and we're going to talk cops, comics, all kinds of shit. The next thing was Clerks 2 is coming out. I think it came out, right?
Yeah, I think it's out this weekend.
And we're sort of divided on it. I think all there's this group... It's sort of like the Star Wars fans, almost, where there's this group of people who are still gung-ho about it, and then there's this group of... And we're talking about Kevin Smith here. You know, there's a group who are gung-ho about Kevin Smith, and then there's a group who are sort of jaded. And we've become jaded, but he's releasing Clerks 2, the sequel to his first movie, Clerks, which is, you know, like a, basically a comedy classic. And I know I'm sort of excited about it. You're not at all.
No. I don't really have any... I don't have any desire to see it, and here's my reasons why. Okay, let's go back to my fan history, I guess. I loved Clerks, my second favorite in that original trilogy, the Jersey trilogy, as they call it. So I liked... In the hierarchy for me, it would go, I really like Chasing Amy. I think that was the one moment where Kevin Smith had a script, and it was actually, it wasn't just, you know, potty humor and whatnot. It was actual, like, there's something tangible to it, and I liked it.
Yeah, he evolved in that movie.
Yeah. He just dropped all the shenanigans of the first two, and he kept, you know, the clever dialogue, but he added a real story and a human element to it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I appreciated that. So I really like Chasing Amy. Then I like Clerks, and you know, Mallrats is just frivolous fun.
Yeah.
So he had me at that point. Then he did Dogma, and I didn't like it at all. I hated that movie, and I still to this day, there's people who defend it. But,
it's
you know,
a terrible movie.
It's a horrendous film, and I don't see what people think is so... There's nothing clever about it. There
nothing at all.
And, it, like, the woman that plays the...
Linda
Jesus,
Fiorentino,
she sucks.
Terrible.
She's one of the worst actresses of all time.
That movie
and,
is just... I mean, like, Chasing Amy was such a great, smart, like, evolution. We were expecting so much, and then Dogma came out, and it became like some... You know, like, super pretentious, like, potty humor mixed with, like, piss-poor religious commentary.
Yeah.
Like, it was just, like, the most problematic and disastrous movie. And then it even went further downhill after that.
Yeah, because then they made Jay and Silent Bob Strikes Back, right? I think that was the next film that came out. I saw that at the theater. There was one scene in the film that I have to say I did laugh my ass off. And that was the scene where they did the Good Will Hunting 2 hunting season or whatever.
Yeah.
And that made me laugh out loud in the theater. But then the rest of the film was like this glitzy sort of... He was just becoming this... It's like something you would see in the teen movie genre. You know, it was a bullshit film in and of itself. And in all the three other films, the characters I probably would say I like least would be Jay and Silent Bob.
Yeah.
I mean, they were best shown in Clerks, but... But in Mallrats and in Chasing Amy, it's like, I don't care about them. I mean, they serve their purpose in that small sense. You know, maybe they give some words of wisdom, but, you know, in general, they're the characters I cared least about in any of those films. And now they're thrust to the forefront because, you know, they became some sort of a cult icon. And so they wanted people running around saying they're snoochie boochies and all that other stuff. And... I don't know, I wasn't a fan of that film. And then he went even further in the tube with Jersey Girl. And with Jersey Girl, thank Christ I didn't see it, but I know for a fact it sucks. I mean, everyone knows it sucks. And there's a quote from Kevin Smith actually in this month's Playboy where he says something about, you know, the reason why it tanked was because Ben and Jennifer were in it. But I don't think that was... I mean, that certainly has something to do with it, but I think it was pretty much... He was done with the series after the third film, and he just kept dragging it out, and now it's coming back. And at this point, I'm done with Kevin Smith, because Whereas other filmmakers of that time, you know, of the mid-90s or so, have evolved, like Alex Proyas and Wes Anderson and all these other really great filmmakers. You know, they've all evolved and kind of broken from their genre or refined their genre to a perfection. And then here's Kevin Smith doing the same old tired material, and he had everything at his disposal after Chasing Amy, and he's decided now to do this.
He's like so unique in that he's like the guy who has a measure of talent, could have went somewhere and done, you know, good film, but it seems almost like he must have this circle of friends that, like, or maybe that circle of friends are his fans who sort of peer pressure him into doing bullshit. And it's almost like he's pandering to fans instead of, you know, trying to maybe expand his own career and go someplace with it. Right. Instead, he's constantly falling back on, oh, the fans want me to do this, so that's what I'm going to do.
But, you know, he's now whittled it down to, like, this core group of people who are either in their late 20s and can't let go of the early 90s, and then this young crowd of people who just like, you know, seeing pot smoking and hear about, you know, dicks and stuff as part of the humor. And I know there's a lot of people who listen to this podcast who are going to disagree with me because I pretty much labeled them right now, because I think pretty much most of them fall into that late 20-somethings who are trying to not let go of that franchise, but it needs to be let go of. It's been done for a decade, if not more.
Yeah.
You know, I think, what, Chasing Amy came out in, I think, 96, maybe? Mm-hmm. And it just needs to, you know, that was where it died. Just let it go. You know, 97 it came out, so it's been pretty much 10 years since his last good film.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and here's, really quickly, here's the other thing with him, too. In terms of where I would expect him to be right now, there's, and he almost was here, there's this perfect market for someone like him who is a nerd, who's read a lot of comic books, and there's all these comic book movies coming out, and I know he was at one time affiliated with the Superman, you know, concept for what just came out, and although I don't think it was in the same, I think he was going to do something about Superman, the death of Superman, but, you know, here's a perfect opportunity for him to show some different side of him, and instead he's doing this.
Well, he, just recently at the San Diego Comic-Con, he was quoted as saying, because they're like, you've been attached to Green Hornet, you know, are you going to be doing that movie? And he's like, I don't want to do a comic book movie because if I do a bad one, then I can no longer criticize them or something like that. But I mean, that goes to show that it's like he's afraid to leave his little comfortable circle of fans who just want mm-hmm. him to do bull. I mean, his fans are the worst of the worst. They don't know shit about film, you know, and they're emotionally immature, probably,
mm-hmm.
you know, and they just want garbage movies to satisfy them, because they liked Dogma, and anyone who likes Dogma has no taste.
Yeah.
So he's just satisfied making movies for them when he could have been so much more, and he's given it all up.
At some point, you know, as a director, it's nice to have your original fans, but at some point you have to shed that skin and say, you know, all right, what kind of risks can I take? You know, what scripts do I really believe in that might not keep me up with my fans? You know, his fans might hate him after making that film, but, like, you know, he could have made films like The Royal Tenenbaums or something like that. He could have had those types of films, and he didn't do it.
I think he's afraid of his fans calling him gay.
Yeah, well, and you know, because of that fear that he has, I don't really want to see a Clerks 2, and because he's failed for the last two or three movies that he's been doing, so I'm done. If I really want to see the Clerks humor, I'll watch Clerks, the original. So
okay, next movie we're going to talk about is this movie called High Tension. It's a French movie, came out in 2003. I've been wanting to see it since 2003. As it looked really cool, simply probably for the fact that it is a French film, and as we know, the French usually don't make crappy movies like we have over here. So the fact some French guy would make a horror movie, it's got to have something interesting to it. So I've been really excited about it. finally got to see it this weekend, and God, man, was it fucking terrible. It was terrible. And here's why. I'm going to spoil this entire movie for everyone in the audience, because you do not want to see this movie. It starts off really good in that it's got a great actress in the lead role, Cécile de France, or whatever. I've never seen her in anything else. She's a French actress. She's really good. And it's her and her friend. They want to study for their finals, so they go to her friend's farmhouse and whatnot. And what ends up happening is this, like, weird psycho trucker guy comes and sort of kills the entire family, but leaves the main character's friend alive. The thing is, he doesn't know the main character's alive in the house as well. So he kidnaps the friend, and the whole movie's about the main character trying to save her friend from this mean trucker guy. And there's this cool sort of lesbian subtext going on where you're not sure if the main character is sort of in love with her friend or whatnot. And there's, you know, doing the name proud, there's a ton of awesome, tense, gory, you know, really great moments in the film. You know, it starts really picking up. There's, like, this big chase. And then it gets to the end, and there's a huge twist. And it's the worst... it's one of the worst twists I think I've ever seen in a movie. And that's that. Throughout the whole movie, you think that this trucker guy is the killer. And, I mean, you see him, everything. He's a real person. He drives a truck. They're interacting. At the end of the movie, there's a twist where it's not the trucker that's the killer. It's the main character. And they just switch over. And it's the main character that's the killer who's been this whole time harassing her friend. And killed the entire family.
I don't understand.
And there's nothing in the movie that backs this up. I mean, it's not like, it's not even a Shyamalan twist where in Sixth Sense there were clues. There's no clues. There's no way you would have seen this coming. I mean, there's two separate characters who at the very end of the movie become one character. It's the most ridiculous twist. It's so cheap and it's so terrible, and it ruined what would have been, without the twist, a really good movie.
I say, in general, we omit twists from all films, because I'm tired of twists. I'm tired of it. And I'm tired of everyone always, like, you know, I hate the, you know, the around the cooler morning talk at work about, did you catch the twist in that film? I'm done with them. Because twists are always a letdown, unless, like, they weren't a letdown until, like, maybe 99, when we had three movies with twists, where we had The Sixth Sense, and then, then we had its rip-off, that Kevin Bacon film, which I liked actually better, and then we had American Beauty, and then Fight Club. We had three twist movies in a row, and they pretty much ruined me for twists.
But the difference here is those twists were built up throughout the movie.
Yeah,
they were built into the movie.
Yeah.
I mean, actually, I'm going to revise this and say people have to see this movie just to see how immensely cheap this twist is. Because the movie is so good, and then the twist happens, and it's like, what the f... I think the problem is you don't, as a person watching a movie, want to be put into the position where you have no chance of figuring the twist out.
Okay.
You know, it's like you feel ripped off.
All right, here we go. This is on the message boards for IMDb, and here's the topic here. All you tards who don't get the ending, Zongaboy 626 has the answer. He says, okay, at the beginning we see her in a mental house about to tell her version of the story to the camera. Everything from here until she goes outside is the truth. And I don't know what this means, but, well, except for the BJ part. She doesn't go outside to smoke the truck. Now, here's where it gets a little confusing. Everything the man did was the truth. All the deaths, etc. Everything she did was a lie. There's no yellow sports car. She called the cops, then left in the truck, parked next to the greenhouse, beat herself up, and went back to the truck. From that point, everything is the truth. It's not a bad ending. It was her point of view. So quit saying it's illogical, or it made no sense. You're the ones in denial.
No, this guy's grasping at straws. He must be the director or something, trying to trying to make sense of it all, because it doesn't make any sense.
Well, judging by his broken English that I just corrected for him while reading it, he probably was the director, the French director.
Yeah,
the guys of Zonga Boy.
So, you know, if you've got Netflix or whatever, and you're getting to the end of your queue, just get the movie, you know, watch it, and just get pissed off. Because actually, you know, it's worth seeing up until the end, because it's actually pretty good up until the end. The guy creates some really great, tense moments, and there's awesome gore. Like, just sick, like, realistic gore that's just great. And there's this great moment.
Like, give an example.
A guy gets his head bashed in by a cabinet, and it just, like, flattens and just... It's like somebody poured a bucket of chili on the floor. It's so great. And then there's this great moment where, you know, because there's the whole movie, throughout the whole movie, you think that this perv trucker guy's, you know, the bad guy and everything, and you just want to see him get fucked up so bad. And at the end, she finally gets his stick and covers it in barbed wire and just beats the hell out of his head. And it's like, you're just like so happy to see this guy get beat. But I think we can move on.
Okay, alright.
Alright, do you want to talk about your cop incident? Do you want to
vent? I'm not as pissed as I was at the one time. Because it was several weeks ago, but alright, here's the gist of what happened. And I'm relating this because I know you and Rory talked about police issues in podcasts, the last few podcasts. So here was my issue. I was driving to go meet with my girlfriend somewhere, and I was at a stoplight. The guy in front of me did not move, and so I pulled around him. Now, mind you, this is, like, normal for what people do here in Hamtramck, so this isn't like I was doing something like a dick. I mean, this is what happened, so...
Yeah, it's a big city. You do whatever you want, you know?
Exactly. So I pulled around him, didn't use my signal, but nobody ever does. I pulled around him. And then I sped up to get around him, and then when I looked in my rear view, there was a cop behind me. Now, when he put on his flashers, I saw him behind me, but his flashers weren't on. So I was just waiting for him to do that, and as soon as he did, I put on my hazard lights, so he knew I saw him. And at that time, he put his lights, his flashers on right when I was going underneath a red light that was right before an overpass that goes over top of I-75, and 6 o'clock at night, so it's still rush hour. There's a ton of people on the road, and so I go past the first light, brings me over onto the overpass. There's a second light. I decide to go through that light, and there's a Coney Island on the corner there. So I pull into the Coney Island driveway, which is on my left. So I make a left into there, and I pull into a parking space. So obviously I'm not running anywhere because I would have to run over a berm of grass to do so into traffic. So he pulls up behind me. I roll down my window. I have my stuff ready because, you know, basically I'm guilty. Yeah, he can get me for a taillight I had burned out. So I've got my stuff ready, and he yells into my car, "What are you thinking?" And I'm like, "What?" He's like, "What are you doing?" And I'm thinking, well, right now I'm getting out my license and registration, you know, so... I'm like, what? You know, I said inquisitively, what? He's like, what do you think you're doing? And he comes, and I go, "I don't know what you're talking about, sir." And he goes, when my lights go on, you pull over right away. I go, "Sir, I did. I put on my hazards and I pulled over." He starts laying into me, saying that I didn't pull over in time, that I didn't pull over right away. And he goes, "Who told you to do that?" And I'm like, what an open-ended question, because honestly, I can name 1,000 people to do that. But my first response is, I go, "Well, that's what I've always been told, is to get out of harm's way, sir." And he's like, "Nobody should have ever told you to do that. When my life, that's why I've got a, that, or how do you put it, that's why I've got my, what's that thing called?
Megaphone.
Damn it, the megaphone. He's like, that's why I've got a megaphone, when I tell you when to pull over." And I go, "Sir, there's traffic everywhere. You know, I wanted to get out of harm's way, you know, for my safety and yours." He's like, "Whoever told you how to do that? License and registration." So I hand him my license and registration, and I'm pissed at this point because he's treating me like a piece of shit.
What did you do to warrant that response?
Nothing.
All you pulled around a guy, and then for very, you know, reasonable reasons, you waited a little while to pull over for your own safety, which you have as your own right as an autonomous fucking citizen
exactly.
on this planet.
Exactly. And he goes, so he takes my license, and he's like, you ever had any tickets? I go, no. He goes, well, you're about ready to have three. And
oh!
You know what, sir? Honestly, if you want to give me three tickets, that's fine. I can afford them. And I don't know if I should have said that. That was kind of a
okay, Bruce Wayne.
Yeah. You know, driving my Saturn Ion. Look, I obviously have wealth, okay? So next time, you know. So anyway, so he's got my license in his hand or whatever, and I go, you know, you can run that if you want to. I have no record. And he goes, your permission? I go, yeah, you have my permission, sir. You can run my license if you would like to. He goes, thanks a lot. I think I will. So he goes back to his car.
So juvenile.
Yeah, and I'm thinking to myself, like, this whole time, I want to get his badge number so bad. If he gives me a ticket, I'm going to get his badge number because he's being such a cock. And he comes back, and then he just goes, just don't ever do that kind of stuff again, all right? You know, there's people out there, and, you know, you drive like an idiot, and you shouldn't be driving like that. I don't know who taught you how to drive. He hands me my stuff back and goes, get out of here. And I'm thinking, well, I got off scot-free, so I shouldn't take any more... I don't want to get this guy more pissed, you know, for whatever reason he was having a bad day, and I really want to get his badge number and say, you know, please look at the video on his dash and see how he treated me, and then that way, you know, his supervisors could have gotten pissed at him because he was in the wrong the whole way. Here, if you're in harm's way, this is especially for women, if you feel as though the guy behind you isn't actually even a cop, you're allowed to drive to the closest place that's well-lit and safe. And for me, sure, it was still light out, but for me to feel safe, I didn't want to be on the side of the road where there's, you know, what, maybe 100 cars are going to pass us in the next, like, 15 minutes or however long this traffic stop takes. I didn't want to be there. And so for me, this vacant parking lot, which is still in plain sight for any drivers in case this guy tries to rough me up Malice Green style. You know, if this guy... This was, like, the perfect place for me to pull over. And it pisses me off that he treated me like I was an asshole for doing
that. Yeah, like, you don't have the right to do it. You have a right to do that.
Yeah.
He's there to protect your safety. You're doing something to ensure your own safety. Therefore, he should be respectful of that. Fuck him, man. Fuck the police.
It just solidified. Yeah, it solidified that. It's such a huge... I think it's a systemic problem. Once people get in that position, they really do feel like they've got the power and that they want, that they need to exert it. And for that guy, he felt as though, you know, I think also because I have long hair and, you know, I looked like some young punk kid, you know, whatever. But it's like, hey, guess what, douchebag? This whole day, that whole day he was pulling me over, I was helping soldiers in Iraq get parts they need for their vehicles. I was doing things that actually have some sort of merit in this world, whereas what he's doing is bullshit. He's harassing people. You know, he mistook me for probably a 16-year-old kid, and now he looked like an asshole for it.
Yeah, it's like, I respect the jobs, the job that cops are supposed to be doing, but I don't respect the fact that almost every single cop I've ever come in contact with has treated me disrespectfully.
Yeah.
And that is a problem not only of the people that... Not all, but, you know, some of the people that are attracted to the police profession are attracted to the wrong reasons. You know, firstly, that it doesn't require an education. Secondly, that it offers you power, gunplay, that sort of thing. And another element is like what you said, that power corrupts, and that they start to think that they're immune or that they've got to act like this just because they deal with dipshits sometimes. But the fact is, they're not always dealing with dipshits.
Exactly. And all you had to do, you can deal with a dipshit or not, all you have to do, if I were a cop, I would just walk up very stone-faced and say, license and registration, please. And then I'd look it over, and I'd say, do you know what you did back there? I would say, no, could you please tell me? And then I would tell, you know. You know what I mean? There is actually a courteous way to be stern.
Yeah, you can be a fucking professional.
Yeah, and I would respect that because I understand he doesn't know who I am. He doesn't know if I've got a gun. And that's like half the danger of their job, and that's what I respect. But the minute that that guy starts telling me that I don't know how to drive and asking me where I learned how to take safety precautions, you know, that is very unprofessional.
And
well,
I mean,
either way, I got out of the ticket mostly because... Oh, go ahead.
I bet cops, you know, a cop would defend himself saying, you know, like, people in all occupations act like this and shit. But there's a big difference in that cops are sworn, you know. Mm-hmm. They're state employees, state protectors. They're sworn just like a doctor is sworn.
Yep.
And they, in their hands is a certain power that is different from most other professionals, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, you've got to hold yourself to a higher standard. And when they don't, you know, it gets us extra pissed.
Yeah, and, you know, just the way he was acting, honestly, my first impression was, I thought to myself, and I've never actually thought this when a cop's pulled me over, this is the first time, but I thought, is he going to pull his gun on me? The way he was yelling, it sounded like he wanted to pull his gun out, or he wanted me to give him a reason to.
Yeah.
You know? And it's just bullshit. But the good side is I didn't get a ticket, and that's because I'm a model citizen. And he just looked like a douchebag. He saw my name. Obviously, he was like, this guy is a co-editor of The Means. I've read that book before. I can't really be mean to him anymore, so I'll just be, you know, I'll try to save face and be a pretend dick until I leave. So, but now he's got himself on here in the this just in Hall of Shame. So
too bad we didn't get his name and badge number so we could publicize it.
I would really love to. If I saw him again, he was your typical cop. He had a mustache. So
oh,
you ever,
yeah.
You know, that's probably also what made him think he had such power.
Let me take a wild guess. He was white.
Yep, he was white. You could tell he had a shaved head. He had a mustache.
Do you think he hated blacks?
I guarantee you, if I was black, I would have been pulled out of that car.
Yeah, it would have been way worse. Way worse.
Yeah. And that's exactly... And, you know, yeah, that's just us... we're making an assumption here. But to be honest, like, being down here in Detroit, that's exactly what he would have done. If it was any other person, any other color, he would have pulled them out of the car.
You know,
I was lucky I was white, I think.
Anyone who pretends that minorities get equal treatment from authorities are fucking fooling themselves.
Yeah. Yeah. No, seriously, and if it was any other race, they would have been on the ground with that cop. There might have been another cop who would have been perfectly fine, but with that cop, they would have been dragged away. So, all right, that was my story. I hate the cops. What's next?
Comics. I love them. And
yeah.
I used to love them. I used to love superhero comics. I'm now into a whole different genre of comics, and I've gone crazy. I can't stop buying them. I read them all the time. And that's sort of, you know, if you're familiar with Jeffrey Brown from our hit issue 1, which I think a lot of people were introduced to these types of comics through issue 1, which I'm happy about. But it's sort of, you know, the graphic novelist, the alternative press sort of comics, where they usually don't involve superheroes. It's just, you know, regular people or whatever. And often it's drama. But I am just loving comics lately. And I went to the San Diego Comic-Con. It was like one of the best experiences of my life. It was like the ultimate geek heaven. I mean, you're surrounded by people in costume. There's video games, comics, everything, films. You know, it was just the best thing ever. And I picked up a ton of comics. So now I've got my official Jeffrey Brown endorsed comics buying list. So I wanted to give a few recommendations to anyone who's interested in getting into these comics, because I really do think that this sort of little genre of graphic novels is one of the most exciting and most interesting forms of, you know, fiction writing and humor writing nowadays. So I've got a certain set that the first one I bought on my own. The rest will be things that Jeffrey Brown recommended to me that I now recommend myself. And the first one I picked up, published by Top Shelf, which is at topshelfcomicswithanx.com, and it's called Carnet de Voyage. It's by Craig Thompson, who's one of the more famous, I guess you'd call him, cartoonists. He did a thing called Blankets, which was critically acclaimed. And this is sort of an interim piece that he did. He did a European travel log, basically. And it's all, you know, nonfiction. And it's a comic that is essentially a diary of just his sketches and experiences on his trip. And there's so many... his art is amazing. It's so spot on. And there's so many great, honest moments in this little travelogue. And particularly, he's sort of a depressive individual. And like midway through the book, there's this moment where, you know, he's like, oh, I'm so depressed. And like his alter ego comes out and he's just like, shut the hell up, you know. Like, it's like such an honest moment where he realizes that all his depression is just sort of selfish, almost. You know, he's like, here you are in Morocco with all these poor-ass people living horrible lives, you know, and here you are feeling bad for yourself, saying how depressed you are when you're like a famous cartoonist, you know. And it's so rare that you see, you know, in the world of emo, in MySpace, where there's all this really, really bad emotional garbage being vomited all over the internet and everything, there's a great, it's so great to see someone become self-aware of their own self-absorbed, selfish depression, you know? And in this book, that's what happens, and it's just great. So that would be my first recommendation. And I don't think anyone will be disappointed with that. Now, there's a second one that I actually recommended to Chris yesterday, which is called The Comic Book Holocaust by Johnny Ryan. Just came out in July, and published by Buena Ventura Press. And all it is taking, you know, famous cartoons like the Peanuts or the Boondocks and parodying them by inserting all kinds of grotesque and completely politically incorrect humor. And it's so disgusting and so laugh-out-loud funny. It sort of reminds me of, what's that, the war comics?
Oh, My New Fighting Technique is Unstoppable.
Yeah, that guy's I can't remember his name.
It's called Get Your War On. What is that dude's name?
I forgot it. Well, anyway, if you're familiar with those comics, it's sort of...
David Reese,
yeah. It's sort of in that same vein, in that it's just completely out of control. You know, every parody, it just goes beyond what you would expect, and it's all just sex, potty sort of humor, and almost every comic in here will make you laugh out loud if you like sort of gross out humor. Otherwise you'll be completely disgusted and think this guy's a horrible person. So that's awesome. And then sort of my wild card, strange, bizarre recommendation, which Jeffrey Brown also recommended but I was going to get anyway, was Alan Moore, who is famous for being probably the greatest comic writer of all time, who's written The Watchmen, V for Vendetta, League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, you know, all kinds of like the most famous comics of all time. He just wrote something with his wife, who did the art, called Lost Girls, published by Top Shelf again, and it's like a 3-volume, oh, this is hard to explain, like erotic comic involving grown-up versions of Dorothy from The Wizard of Oz, Wendy from Peter Pan, and Alice from The Looking Glass. And it's like a bizarre, erotic account of their lives as adults when they meet on some resort in pre-World War I Europe. And for nothing else, it's worth it for Alan Moore fans to just see Alan Moore go into a genre that really has been untouched by anyone respectable and make something that, on one hand, would appeal to erotic fans, you know, fans of erotic literature, but on the other hand, is really smart and sort of brings some sort of clout to the genre. And, I mean, it's something I would have never, ever read before, except the fact that his name's attached to it. And it's just, I mean, it's fascinating. If you're a fan of comics, if you're a fan of Alan Moore, it's worth it. You know, it's expensive as hell. It's like, I got it for like $60 on discount.
Damn.
But, I mean, the art is beautiful. And it's Alan Moore. And it's something I'm sure no one that's listening to this podcast has ever read before. Because every chapter involves some sort of erotic situation with Wendy, Alice, and Dorothy. And I mean, it's wild, but it's, and obviously the priority is the the erotic nature of the text, but what's even more interesting is how Alan Moore makes it intelligent, I guess.
Interesting.
Well, so those are my huge recommendations right now. I haven't gotten to Jeffrey Brown's newest, but I'm sure it's awesome. It always is.
Quick question, because I've seen some clips on the local news about the Comic-Con out there, and you got to see, or I don't know if they were there that day, but did you get to see the Battlestar Galactica people, the Gaius Baltar?
No, they were there the day after, and
crap.
I was planning on going the next day, but the parking situation down there, it's at the San Diego Convention Center. They had 150,000 people pre-registered. And the San Diego Convention Center parking was limited only to VIPs. So to park, you had to park somewhere in downtown San Diego. And I'm telling you, every fucking parking lot and structure was full. So what I had to do, and this was on Thursday, not the popular day, probably the least populated day, I got into a parking structure finally, and I circled it for, I'm not kidding you, a half hour straight circling the goddamn place just to get a spot, along with probably 25 other cars that were just circling this, just one parking structure in downtown San Diego. So I was like, as much as I would like to go again, it wasn't worth it. Next year I'm definitely getting a hotel and I'm going all 4 days because it is worth going all 4 days.
Wow. Yeah, I'll be out there next year then too to go see it.
And what's,
I'll make a weekend out of
what's
it.
What's really cool about it is there's famous people everywhere down there.
Yeah, who'd you see?
I bumped into, physically, to the Jigsaw Killer from Saw. Lou Ferrigno was, of course, there. Billy West, who used to be on the Howard Stern Show. Dita Von Teese, who is sort of like, I think she's like a Playboy model slash like goth model. Every famous comic book guy you could ever imagine was there. Rosario Dawson, Samuel L. Jackson, every nerd icon from every TV show. I mean, there's just a million famous people there.
Not to mention, what was the best costume you saw someone wearing?
The Ghostbusters, I think. There's four guys, and I mean, spot-on accurate Ghostbuster costumes.
Did they have an Egon of, did they have an Ernie Hudson character?
Yeah, they had a black guy.
Wow.
And they had proton packs and everything with lights and... that was an impressive get-up.
Was there a Janine with him?
I don't think so.
A little redhead, no.
What's amazing about the costume is, I didn't know how many people actually dressed up. But it seemed like 1 in 10 people were dressed up. So,
wow.
That was impressive in
itself.
Did
you see, like, G4 or anyone there?
No, they were there the next day, which I was pissed about because I wanted to get on TV, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, but next year, for sure, I'm going to be there. It's just great. I recommend any fans of anything geek to go there if you're within proximity.
How much does it cost?
$25 a day or $65 for all 4 days.
Well, that ain't too bad, $65 for all four.
No, that's well worth it.
Would it take 4 days to get through that whole place?
Well, you could because, I mean, the exhibition floor can be done in a day, which I did, but I didn't really hardcore browse. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, all 4 days they have signings and panels that you can go to see, which were all, there was a ton of great panels with, like, Neil Gaiman, the Battlestar cast,
mm-hmm.
Really good comic book writers that I would have liked to have seen. Yeah, it was cool.
All right,
definitely those are some good comic recommendations, and I highly suggest if you're looking to get into comics to look at that stuff.
Yeah. What other topics do we have for this podcast?
Dave Chappelle.
What'd you want to say about him?
Have you noticed the lost episodes that are airing?
I've seen them online. I've seen clips from them, and I noticed that he's not even on them.
He's
in the clips, but he's not hosting the show.
Yeah, he left the show, and basically he told them, he left the show for whatever reasons. I believe his reasons were that he was beginning to worry that his comedy was sort of getting appropriated by racists and, conservative white America, and they were more laughing at him than with him,
mm-hmm.
Which is a completely valid concern, and people should really be proud of him for worrying about that in the first place, and in the second place, having the balls to refuse millions of dollars because he was worried about that.
Yeah.
But and knowing that, what really bothers me is the fact that he left and he said, if people air these episodes, that he'll never come back to the show. So obviously he didn't want them to air. It's his fucking show. His name's on the show. He created it. He's, you know, he's 90% of the talent on that show. And here, his two buddies, Charlie Murphy and Donnell Rawlings, and everyone else on the show, released the episodes without him.
Yeah. And, you know, it's funny you bring this up, because I know I read somewhere about this, and I don't, maybe it was in this month's Playboy, though. There is a thing about this. Shit, what did they say regarding it? Because there is a, I mean, they basically were saying that Dave, like, there's no bad blood between Dave and the other two guys. It's because mm-hmm. Comedy Central hired those guys to do the hosting on it.
Okay.
And, you know, for them, they need to, you know, they're millionaires. So it's a good gig for them. And I think Dave recognized that, but he basically said, I'm not doing releasing this pretty much against his will. You know, they're just trying to make a quick buck off of it. And, because I don't know if he's getting any money for this. I think they gave him the money for to film the shows, but I don't think he's making money off the...
No,
I think
probably not.
It's the rights to the third season. So
maybe the real villains here are Comedy Central.
I think they are all around. I mean, it sucks Dave Chappelle. I think he reneged on a contract, which isn't something... You don't really welch on something like that.
No.
But he did it for principled matters, if what you say is true. And then even if it was just because he was really stressed out and worried that there was overhead control, which is what I had always heard. He didn't like that there was like a... I think like sitting in on some of their writing sessions was a Comedy Central goon type guy who was like out and censor their stuff or you know, like put in a spin, and Dave was like, well, it's no longer my comedy anymore then. Mm-hmm. That's what I had always heard too. Now, this could all be rumor. I don't know.
Yeah, he needs to come out with a book or something to explain all this.
Yeah. Because he's really left a... when it comes to that show, which was a great show, it just did start catching on, and that's a legitimate concern to fear that people are using the comedy that you're using to kind of identify the ridiculousness of racism, and then to use it for somewhat, you know, solidifying a racist purpose, almost, you know.
Yeah, because on one of the recent Lost episodes, they had the famous, you know, they called it like the famous sketch that really, I guess, worried Dave, and it was called like the racist pixie or something, and basically it took, you know, people of different races, and then they had like their stereotype pixie. Like for the black person, it was somebody in blackface, you know, and it would put like Dave in a situation where like, hey Dave, do you want more chicken? And then like the pixie would pop up and you know, be like in blackface and be like, yeah, eat that chicken, nigga, and stuff like that, you know.
Oh, okay.
And I think his worry was that people were going to laugh at that bit, not at how ridiculous racism was, you know, or how terrible it was, mm-hmm. but more like laughing at it. It's like, yeah, look at that black guy and the chicken, you know, and the, you know, that type of thing. And I mean, that is, I've been struggling with the same issues regarding San Andreas, you know, and writing about San Andreas, and there's a lot of racist content in there, you know, but then you've got to struggle over, is it, you know, is it complicit with racism or not? And those are always valid questions and questions that need to be asked. You know, and it's so great to see someone of his stature and set to make as much money as he was have those concerns and actually back himself up on it. And then it was just sort of disappointing me that these episodes aired anyway when he himself didn't want them to air, you know?
Yeah.
I think that... But I guess it is Comedy Central and that, you know, they should be the villains of this whole situation, really.
Yeah. All right, so what else? Is there any more topics?
That's all I've got.
All right, I don't think I had anything else. I can't remember. What else did I have? I think that was it, just the cops and the Clerks thing, really. Well, I think that wraps up another successful podcast, although this one is long, and we realize that, but we're just giving you that extra dose that you were missing before. And, we'll be back again next week, though, probably, I think.
Yeah, and at next week, we might even have a special guest.
Really?
Yes.
Who?
Scott.
Yeah?
If I can dig up my microphone splitter.
Oh, is he coming out to visit you, or is he...
Yeah, for a weekend, and then he's going to some wedding.
Okay, well, that's cool. All right, well, everyone's in for a treat next week, then.
And he has seen Clerks 2, so...
We might have to have an argument, me being the person who has no basis for their argument, and he being the person who saw it. That's you stuff I don't know about. All right, so that does it. Cue the music.
Yep, bye.
Bye.